at WGTD.org.
I'm Gregory Berg, and Monday's morning show here on WGTD is something of a memorial tribute to Dr. Thomas Knorr, a longtime and beloved member of the faculty at Carthage College who recently passed away. I'm going to be replaying my conversation with him from 2009, in which he talks about his book, Soapy, a biography of G. Menon Williams, a man whom Professor Knorr greatly admired. Monday's morning show begins just after 8.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library, who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. Well, I hope by now we all realize the important role the arts play in a vibrant community. We've talked on previous Community Matters programs, how they contribute to the quality of life and attract visitors to our local community, as well as keep us entertained. One of the longtime contributors to quality of life is Kenosha's Lakeside Players Theater Group, housed in the Rohde Center for the Performing Arts. And today I'm looking forward to talking with Katie Gray, who is president of LSP's Board of Directors. So, Katie, let's start with kind of that high view of what the Lakeside Players is and Rohde Center for the Performing Arts.
Yes, absolutely. So Lakeside Players is a nonprofit community theater company. We actually formed 51 years ago, and we are currently the caretakers of the Rohde Center for the Performing Arts. So there are two theater stages there that we put on theatrical productions all year long. We also rent to various theatrical productions looking for a stage. We are 100% volunteer organization. So everyone who is a part of the organization from the board on down is a volunteer.
And that's pretty amazing. I want to get into the weeds a little bit to talk about the Lakeside Players, about your new season, which sounds pretty awesome. And what do you think has really changed over the 51 years of your existence?
I think there are a lot of things that have changed because obviously it's been 51 years.
Yeah.
I think there are two pretty big things I think that changed. One is the caliber and the type of shows that we're able to perform. Doing the types of shows that we're performing last season, this season, and certainly next season is really something I don't think we could have conceived of 10, 20 years ago. And we also now have two stages. We've had two stages for a while now. We have a smaller, we call it our black box stage, that is Skinner and Skinner Hall, and that is kind of our smaller stage. And then we have, we call it Donna, which is our bigger stage. And so we actually are able to kind of double our performances, which is great.
And I do want to talk about that, especially when we're talking about the Rohde Center. But caliber of performances, and I guess I'd have to agree with just I don't go to a play every year, and I apologize for that. But I see some of the things that you're offering, and I'm thinking, wow, what has changed to allow you to really expand what you're offering?
Honestly, I think the talent we have coming in, I think before we cater very much to the Kenosha area. And we still do, obviously, but we get a lot of people coming in from Racine and Milwaukee, and a lot of people coming in from Illinois. You know, community theater is one of those things that once you like to do it, you can't get enough of it. And so I think they go to every theater they can. And so we're lucky that we have great theater, community theaters around us in Illinois and in Racine and Milwaukee. And it kind of brings in people who maybe don't, who only want to do a certain show, or who are only are like, oh my God, this has been my dream show. This is what I want to do. I don't care where it is. Certainly that happened last year with Beauty and the Beast. The lovely actress who played our Belle came all the way from, it was 2 hours away in Illinois. And she was like, this is a dream role. So, you know, she made the trek in. Wow. And I think that helps. Yeah. I think honestly, probably the nature of, technology and social media makes it a lot easier for, us to be able to get the word out about shows that we're doing. I think that has just been like a natural progression.
And that in terms of attracting performers, how do you go about doing that? You mentioned that technology has changed to allow that, but is there kind of an insider network for attracting community theater performers?
I feel like the insider network is probably our actors. So, you know, a lot of our actors, they do shows other places. And so it's just by word of mouth. So definitely, you know, actors who come in from different areas will go, oh, you know, the Roadie's doing Beauty and the Beast, or they're doing Avenue Q, which is what we just finished up in February, you know, shows like that. And, you know, we're very lucky again in that we have a fairly large community to kind of pool from. I think also just posting it on Facebook and Instagram, and we have a robust email system that we use, but a lot of it is just word of mouth from our current actors telling their friends who are in shows. You know, we also are extremely lucky in Kenosha to have Parkside and Carthage.
No.
And they have very good theater programs. And, you know, a lot of their students will come and do a show with us because, again, we offer something that we might offer a show that they've really wanted to do, but their schools just aren't doing it. There's only, unfortunately, so many shows you can do in a year. So.
Oh, for sure. And, yeah. And I know that our high school theater program has won numerous national awards, and I'm sure that helps as well as a feeder.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we have a lot of people, especially when we do shows that are tailored to a younger audience, or we call them junior shows, where it has to be a younger performer. You know, we're very lucky. Kenosha has an insanely good theater program as part of its education system. I don't think a lot of other places can say that. We're very, very lucky in that aspect.
Tell me a little bit about the upcoming season. I know you recently made your big announcement. Why don't we repeat that big announcement in case people have missed that?
Yes. So our 51st season was just announced. We are, this is by far sort of our most ambitious season to date. We actually have started it out with a bonus show opening in June, which is the Greek mythology Olympia Ganza, which is, it's actually very funny. It's basically two competing narrators telling Greek stories. And it's very funny because obviously it's somewhat inaccurate. It's much like, you know, it just imagine essentially two high school kids telling each other Greek mythology stories. It's going to be sort of jumbled, and it's great. We also have a theater intensive this year, which is the first time we've ever done this. This is specifically for kids 9 and up. And at the end, they'll actually be putting on the SpongeBob musical, our youth edition, which is going to be open to the public, which is great. We're very excited about that because it's the first time we've ever been able to do a kids camp, so to say. And then as far as our quote unquote regular season, we have three musicals. We have Young Frankenstein, Anastasia, and our sort of ending musical, which was something that we were all so excited to get, which was Hairspray.
Oh, yeah.
It's a show that personally I love. I've seen multiple times on stage, and it's just one of my favorite shows. And then as far as our plays go, we have Puffs, which is about a certain group of young wizards in a wizarding school that I cannot name, but everyone can probably guess what it is. Clue, which of course is a great, great show, based on the movie, which is based on the board game. And then Moonglow, which is a very touching story about a couple with about Alzheimer's. So, and about how families deal with that and about how they're dealing with that. So it is definitely our most ambitious season. Three musicals is a lot, but we're really excited about them. And then we're very excited about the rest of the shows too. I personally am very excited about Puffs because I saw that and it was hysterical. And yeah, it was a very good show.
And all of these, each one is quite diverse from the other show, which means that you really do have to pull in a lot of expertise and specialties from people. You mentioned musicals as being ambitious, particularly ambitious. I think I can guess why, but why don't you tell us?
So musicals are always really ambitious because there's a lot of moving parts with musicals. There are a ton of moving parts with plays, but with musicals, it's times 100. You have dancing and singing, and you have to find actors who can do that at the same time. You have sound that we have to do from a tech perspective, sound and lights. So we often need actors who are kind of well-versed in the music already. You know, we're a community theater, so we rehearse at night, and we're volunteer-based. So we have to look for people who can help us with choreography and direction and doing the lights. And we have a really good group of people who are great at this. Costuming, you know, for a lot of musicals, it's a lot of very quick costume changes or very specific costumes. Hairspray is one that comes to mind because obviously it is set in a time period. So we have to make sure all the costumes are correctly timed, you know, hair and makeup. Musicals in itself are just like really hard. And then they are, and it's crazy the amount of moving parts. And then we do something that I personally love is we try to do a live band whenever possible. So for Avenue Q, we had a live band. Prior to COVID, we had a live band. So we did Little Shop of Horrors, which was our show in February of 2020. We eked it out just in time. We had a live band for that too. And that was I think a 10-piece live band. So it's also getting people from the community who have kind of zero interest in theater to want to come and do shows just because they know how to play music. And that is something that I wish I did. I don't. I took piano lessons for about 2 years. But I wish I had stuck with it, of course, but hindsight. And so it's one of those things. And especially when you have something like Hairspray is a great example. That is a very dance intensive show. So it's going to be very interesting, you know, that journey. Beauty and the Beast last year was also a very dance intensive show. And so that was also, you know, a learning experience because it was so dance heavy. So that's kind of anytime you have anything like that, it's a lot of moving parts that you have to have the right people in place and they all have to work well together.
Before I talk more about the people power, have you told us all of the plays then now for the season that you have scheduled?
Okay. Yeah, I'm making sure I didn't miss any. Yeah, I did. And then, of course, the last show for this season is Seussical the Musical, which opens in just a couple weeks. It actually opens on the 26th of April.
Okay. Yeah, can't miss that one. All right, people power. You've mentioned the word We're all volunteer. Of course, we're all volunteer. We're volunteer. But every time you say that, you're hooking it onto a job that somehow in the back of my mind, I thought might be paid. Or I don't know if I thought some of these things just fall from the sky. But so actors, musicians, somebody.
So the biggest volunteer. So it's mostly everybody. The only people who are quote unquote paid positions would be if they have stipends. So like, for instance, when we did Avenue Q, our musicians had a stipend, and that was only available because we actually had a grant that specifically went to making sure we had live musicians. But all of our actors, our front of house staff, all of our board, it's all 100% volunteer. Our directors are volunteer. We have offered a stipend in the past for some of our choreography, but that stipend in compared to kind of what they could be making outside of community theater is, you know, is very small in comparison. So yeah, we are volunteer based, you know, and people don't just do the standard, you know, most of our people don't come in and just do the rehearsals from 7 to 9. You know, they're helping paint on the weekends. They're helping build the set. They're helping gather costumes. You know, our costume designers are all volunteer. So I would say we're almost exclusively a volunteer base with the small exception of stipends that are usually able to be provided because of a donation or a grant that we've received.
And something tells me nobody's going to pay their monthly rent using that stipend.
Yeah, not even
just
close.
A wild guess.
Yeah, that would be correct.
So you have people who are working their butts off, which is wonderful. And then you also have, though, the equipment they work with, the lights, the materials used in building the sets, the makeup itself, the pieces of material used in costuming. Does that money come from ticket sales? Does it come from grants and donations?
All of the above. It comes from ticket sales. It comes from grants. We've been open. We've been, like I said, a theater company for 51 years, and we've been in our space since the mid-80s. So we have a very robust costume loft. It has a little bit of everything. And we are very lucky to have some very competent people on a sewing machine.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, it is. We get things donated to us all the time, but we do often have to, if it is very specific, we often have to rent costumes. Beauty and the Beast, we had to rent costumes, for example. And so, you know, we are able to do that via ticket sales, via any grants we get, donations. Donations are our biggest thing. People donate costumes to us all the time, too. You know, dresses and ball gowns and such that they aren't going to probably ever wear again. I myself have donated several bridesmaid dresses that I will never wear again. And so, yeah, all of that is donated. As far as lights go, we're actually in the very slow process of sort of transitioning all of our lights to bigger, better lights, so LEDs, and that is a slow process because it is expensive, but we are at like a very good point place for that. And then any of the other like kind of equipment, like microphones, that is, you know, directly out of sort of the budget for the show. And we sort of do the budget based on how well we think the show is going to do. And so we're able to invest in some of that stuff. And so what's really nice is, like, obviously lights and mics and some of the other items, you know, it's a one-time purchase. We're not having to buy it every show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Costumes are always different. So it really depends on if we have someone who is really good at costumes, or if we have a show that kind of lends itself to kind of wearing whatever. And certainly there are shows that do that, that are kind of, modern time, modern dress, but, we do have, we have a couple shows this year that are going to be very specific costumes. Like I said, such as Hairspray, Anastasia, Young Frankenstein even. So, and then obviously when you think of shows like Beauty and the Beast, you think of the costume, think of the cartoon, the Disney cartoon, or you think of the live action, or you think of the show you've seen. You know, obviously Belle has to have that big, beautiful yellow dress. And so we did have to rent several dresses. We were actually, for that show, people were able to, they lent us dresses too. That is what's also very nice about the fact that there are so many theater organizations in this area, is that we're able to reach out and say, hey, do you by any chance have this? And they reach out to us too, because we have a very large building that holds a lot of stuff. And a lot of theater companies don't have it. They don't have such a large space. So we're able to kind of house more things, especially our costumes and our props.
You were just starting to answer my next question, is that kind of relationship with other theater organizations. Being halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee, not to mention a lot of the smaller, well, Racine and other cities with community theater, whether there is sort of a gentleman's rental agreement, you know, for a dollar, you can use this. I mean, does that happen, or just among a few good friends?
It really depends. I think it happens a lot more than it used to. I think COVID kind of opened everyone's, not pocketbook, but kind of opened everyone's like ability to, you know, to want community theater to succeed. We've rented, lent to various organizations. We've certainly borrowed, and even like renting from an organization, typically they're letting us sort of, you know, have a good deal, like you were saying. So even if we are quote unquote renting it, you know, we're able to rent it for a good deal. We primarily use, just purely luck based on where we are. There's a costuming company out of Milwaukee that we use pretty exclusively. And it's just easy because we could just go up there and get the costumes. We don't have to worry about shipping or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where it gets expensive.
Oh, I can imagine. Sometimes you see shipping on things that cost as much as the article itself.
Yeah.
And with the large nature of some of the costumes that you would rent, I can see where that get crazy. So let's, we'll probably come back to talk about the theater performing part of it, but let's move on now to talking about the Rohde Center for Performing Arts. First of all, I know that's a bit of a name change over time.
Yes.
And I can remember when I first came to Kenosha, Judy Rosso was leading the charge to preserve that building, and an awful lot has happened since then. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a rundown.
Yeah, so the theater itself is actually the, I'm trying to do quick math, and I can't, it's 97 years old.
Wow.
Which is great, except it is a little expensive to maintain.
Yes.
Lakeside Players took ownership of it in 1988. The Rohde family who owned it, they wanted to gift the property to an eligible organization. So, that's what we were able to do. So renamed the Rohde Opera House, because that's initially what it was. And we were able to kind of move in there. Since we do more than just plays, and we do, as you know, arts, we have the Pollard Gallery next door. We did rename it the Rohde Center for the Arts. And that is, you know, that's what it is called currently. And yeah, it is, it's a great old theater. People have never been in it, I recommend it, because it's gorgeous. So a lot of the things that were there in 1927 when it was built are still there. So our chandeliers are still there. The problem with it are some of our benches. The problem with an old theater is that it's extremely costly to heat air condition. And an old building just comes with its own set of fun problems. Plaster repair is one of the biggest ones. But the biggest one right now is a roof. So we are currently working to get a new roof because it was renovated about 10 years ago, but we need a complete new roof structure. So, which has been fun.
No, but I hear you talking, and you're so well versed in talking about the performing side of things. But it also sounds like you're pretty keen on the business side, and that's pretty tough to try to make it survive and, in fact, be sustainable. How are you feeling about that right now, and what are your greatest needs in terms of financial support, and how do you go about getting that?
So actually right now we're doing really good. We actually had kind of a record-breaking season going into February of 2020. And then the world shut down for a couple years.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of community theaters globally and certainly in the country did shut down. They couldn't keep their doors open. We were very, very lucky to be able to keep our doors open. And actually last season was the first season. So our 49th season was the first full season in 2 years. Before that, we sort of had sporadic shows here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now we're at, you know, kind of like the best place we've been at since prior to COVID. And I credit that a lot with the caliber of shows. And then Beauty and the Beast last year set just about every record we had.
Yes.
So that was very nice. Mm-hmm. And then right now, I would say our number one fundraising effort is for the roof. And there's a variety of things we're doing. We're doing private fundraising. We're also writing grants. Which if you've ever written a grant, it's a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
And I thankfully have a couple people on our team that are very, very good at it because I am only okay at it. So,
it's consuming.
Yeah. It's extremely time consuming. But we're really, we've been able to secure some funds there. It's a very expensive project. It does run about $150,000, which is just a lot of money.
So,
you know, we haven't been able to raise it all, but, you know, we're slowly raising it, and people come up with fundraising ideas all the time, which is great. Because I think the more people that contribute to kind of the ideas, the better, because there's only so many ideas I have or that the board has. And so when they're like, hey, I think we should do this, I'm like, great, let's do it.
Yeah, that it's wonderful when people can jump in and assist in that regard. Do you have, I'm not sure if you're comfortable talking about it, but are there some major backers who are not afraid to come forward and, you know, be recognized for all that they do for you and for the building itself, and whether they're corporate or individual, foundation, local?
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of major backers. One of the biggest backers we probably have, just in terms of sponsoring, and then we have a couple of them, sponsoring and then just helping get the word out. Our biggest one, and probably like our most, not friendly, but our most like valued one, is probably Visit Kenosha. Visit Kenosha by itself has helped us tremendously. They've given us you know, donations for shows. They obviously feature us in their Visit Kenosha stuff. They're great. They're amazing to work with. They've really tried to help us a lot. Our other one is Jockey. So Jockey has sponsored two of our shows so far. So they sponsored Madagascar Junior in the beginning of the season, and they're actually one of the sponsors for Seussical.
Right.
And then we've also received donations from We Energies and just a couple other little sources. But mostly, most of our fundraising has been just from people giving us, you know, money just, you know, donating it.
Type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Friends of the theater, essentially. So just willing to donate time and money. One of our biggest fundraisers of the year, we just had a couple weeks ago, which was Bowls and Books.
Right.
And so obviously the Copy Center is one of our most valued partners by far, because we just have a good history with Sharon now, who runs it, but Judy prior to that, because she's sort of the, I call her our fairy godmother of the theater. She was,
appropriate.
You know, she was just Judy. Yeah. She was just Judy. And I feel like if you know Kenosha, and you knew it, you know, a few years ago, you just knew Judy. She was just there.
For sure. Her passion was amazing. And I'm glad to hear Sharon is following in her footsteps. That's good news.
Yes.
So, funding must be difficult, because you're doing so much as volunteers already. We've heard, you know, the amazing thing that actors are pretty much volunteer, musicians, a little bit of both, people doing set painting and working the sound equipment. Everybody's pretty much volunteering. So it really does come down to structure and rentals taking a lot of those funds, and probably not a lot of people left over to do the fundraising.
There aren't. Definitely, I think some people, there are some people who really enjoy that side of it. They really enjoy raising money for the theater. And I certainly do, but it's not my number one passion with theater. So it's been really nice, especially when they have, like I said, we have members who have done grant writing in the past. And so they just sort of take to it a little bit more naturally. And I think that's extremely helpful. Sort of anyone with any skill set, you know, can come into the theater and I'll find something for them to do. That's for sure.
It sounds like a real labor of love for you. Can you tell me a little bit about your background, Katie?
Oh, sure. So I actually... my father was a part of this theater, starting, when they were still at Kemper. So prior to, us having the Rhodey Center, we performed at Kemper Center. So, he was a part of it for, almost since the beginning, and, took a little time off when I was born, and then, kind of brought me in. I watched his rehearsals. You know, I remember being 8 years old and being in there. And then, basically as soon as I was old enough to pop popcorn, I was back in the concession stand and I was selling tickets. So I've been down there, I was just, since I was about eight. So it's been 30 plus years. And I love it. It's my home away from home. It's the place that, you know, I probably know better than my childhood home. I've spent more time there for sure. I always joke that sometimes I spend more time there than I do in my actual house. And, so it's just, for me, it's just one of those places that, it's kind of my comfort place. And I've been with the theater through, several ups and downs. And it's really nice to see, new blood in the theater and new people and people that are just so willing to help out.
That is terrific. Now, did you do any acting, or have you always kind of supported the organization?
No, acting and directing. So I think I probably prefer directing because I'm just a little type A. And I really enjoy directing. I really love acting too. But when I was younger, we didn't have kids shows or even shows with a lot of kids in them. So I had to take sort of a behind the scenes role very young if I wanted to kind of do any of this stuff with the theater. So I do a little bit of all of it, but I really do enjoy the, you know, being on the board and kind of helping run it as a business. That is, I would say, relatively new. I've been on the board for about 10 years now, though. So it's not that new.
So You've mentioned, and I wanted to catch up on what you had said earlier about kids' plays, and that you really hadn't focused on that audience. Tell me a little bit about, if you can remember, when that difference came forward and what the thought process was for that.
You know, I think that probably came, there's a 5-year period I wasn't a part of the theater because I lived in Texas. And it really started then. We started doing, they're called junior shows. So it's like Little Mermaid Junior, Aladdin Junior, those type of shows. We started doing those shows. And then while we still enjoy doing the kids shows, and we're so excited about this, the kids theater intensive, there is a very good children's theater mere blocks from the Rhodey that really does cover a lot of the children's shows. So we are more focused on shows that like kids would enjoy, like Beauty and the Beast or Anastasia, or, you know, quote unquote adult shows that they can be in. So a good example of that is Hairspray, because there are obviously there are high school children.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it would be shows like that. So we're not focusing so much on like doing shows that are, you know, only for children 18 and under, but more shows that are more encompassing of everybody. So kind of everyone can enjoy them. I think it's great because I've seen now several stages of children come into the theater at, you know, 14, and now they're in college, and now we have the younger kids again, and now they'll go. It's very weird to see that, to be like, oh, they're in college now, or to get invited to like graduation parties. And I'm like, what? No.
How did that happen?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's kind of one of the greatest things, because I always hope that they'll come back to us, you know, after they're gone. And a lot of them do. A lot of them be like, oh yeah, I was in a show like when I was like 7, but now I'm here again as an adult. And I'm like, that's so crazy. So I love that.
Crazy, it's wonderful. I think that it really says a lot about the quality and just feeling like a family.
Yeah, yeah. And we all, you know, we get to know the parents so well, you know, and a lot of them will have multiple children kind of come up. So it'll be like the oldest one, and then their little siblings come behind them. And like I said, it's wild to me that now some of them are even out of college. I don't feel like I'm that old, so I don't love that, but it happens.
It does. Trust me. So let's talk a little bit about that intensive that you have. You said it's the first time that you've done basically a camp, a theater camp.
Yeah, so it's 3 weeks, and it is a 9 to 3 o'clock intensive, where basically the kids will be helping build the sets, paint the sets, get the costumes, kind of everything that goes into theater. Also while learning the SpongeBob musical. And it's really awesome, because I think a lot of people get into it. I certainly know people who are like, well, I don't really want to be on stage. And it's like, but I'd love to do lighting, and I'd love to do the set design and how to, you know, build things. And we wanted to kind of provide everything. I certainly know people who are like, I don't ever want to be on stage. I just want to do like set building or costume design. And that is great, because that is equally as important, if not more so, because there's usually less of them. And so it's really nice that this is, like I said, the first time we've done it. We have a great set of instructors that are going to be kind of leading the kids throughout all of this. And they range from, you know, our main director, his name is Brandon. He's actually relatively new to the theater. He's only come to us in the last couple of years. We have a vocal director. We have a props guru, as I'll call her, and she's created props. So she's, you know, she kind of can create stuff out of nothing, which again, baffles me. but yeah, so it's going to be really great. It starts July 15th, and then it goes until, I say August 3rd, but that's because that weekend is the weekend of the shows. So it's actually going to be public shows, so anyone can come and see the show, which I think is great, because they're not just performing for like their parents or their family. They're going to perform for the community like they would do in a normal show.
Wow. That is great. Now, if somebody wanted their child to get involved in this, are you already booked or can they
We are
still
no, we are
contact
not.
you?
They can still, yep, they can still reach out. So they can actually go to Rhodey Center. So it's Rhode Center spelled normal, .org, and they can find all that information. They can also find the information of like if they had questions, they can email the director. We have a pretty robust Facebook page. It's LSP Kenosha. And they can go there too, because we post all the time. And then we actually have some outreach shows that are going to be coming to see Seussical. So we're doing a couple daytime shows for various schools in the community, and we'll have information there too.
We're familiar with the Lakeside Players performing at the Rhodey Center for Performing Arts, but we may not be as aware of others coming in and using the theater, renting the theater. Does that happen a lot?
Occasionally, we have a couple kind of long-term rentals that we've had for years. One of them is the Kenosha Spirit Market. So that is actually a really great organization that comes in and sets up in our lobby, and they sell different merchandise. And they're great. They're a great group. They really treat the theater like their own, which I love. And they come in once a month, and they do that. We actually work with the Kenosha Pride organization, and they do their main benefit in our space every year. We don't, that's not a rental, that we do that as a community sponsorship. But they're another one of our partners. And then we also work with Pressed Ham Productions, and they actually do a burlesque show typically every January. And other than that, we've had various organizations come in and just use it for like just a show because they don't have another space. We had fleeing artists in our space for a long time. The Kenosha Opera Festival was in our space. So yeah, we do really we have a really large space, and of course we have downtime for some shows. So we try to, you know, make sure that we're utilizing it for the community because it's a community arts space. We don't want it to just be our space and everyone else go away. We want to make sure that, you know, the community can benefit from the space as well.
Oh, for sure. And I'm sure it helps your bottom line, which then again helps everybody.
Yeah, and it gets people in that wouldn't normally be in the space, especially with the Kenosha Spiritual Market. We have a lot of people who come in and go, "Oh, I've never been in this building before." And so that's really exciting. So we get a lot of people. We've gotten some good volunteers out of that where they're like, "Oh, you know, I've done costumes before. Awesome. Like, are you interested in this?" So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that we, you know, we kind of love to have those rentals. We also do like birthday parties. I personally did my college, I'm sorry, my high school graduation party there.
Oh yeah.
So, we've done weddings.
Well, your lobby is gorgeous, let alone the theater part.
Yes. Yeah. The lobby in itself is amazing. It's, yeah, like I said, it's one of my happy places.
So we have just about a minute left, and I hate to leave this to the end, but you mentioned you have two theaters now. Can you describe that just a little bit more?
Yep, we have our main theater, which is the Donna Staggerwald Auditorium. So this was actually the owner of Jockey, and she donated quite a bit of money for us to be able to fix the theater, and we named it after her. And then the other theater is our Skinner Hall. So Ed Skinner is our master set builder. He actually still builds sets for us. He's been doing it
Wow.
since the 90s, and he basically was like, "Hey, we should make this theater a black box." And he kind of did all of that. And so we named it after him. So it allows us to do shows that are a little bit smaller. We use that auditorium a lot for rentals. So it's nice to have two different spaces that can you can use for a variety of things.
Katie, our time is up. You've been awesome. We've been talking with Katie Gray, who is president of Kenosha's Lakeside Players Board of Directors, about both the theater group and the Rohde Center for the Performing Arts. And I'm Jane Herring for WGTD's Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine.